It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from atop Signal Hill overlooking beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it is currently 39 degrees, a bit warmer than it has been. And we're looking for a 30% chance of rain today, mainly between noon and 3 p.m. Looking for rain as well tomorrow. High near 48 tomorrow, high near 45 today. Coming up on the Midday News, a new case of COVID in Kodiak. We say goodbye to a friend and a reporter. Election update. Some Alaska legislators would like Governor Dunleavy to call a special session. We'll find out why. The Coast Guard only has one heavy icebreaker. Why will it be coming this way instead of its usual mission down south? All that and more after national headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Former Vice President Joe Biden appears to be on the verge of an Electoral College win if the mailed-in ballots keep trending for him. Alleging election fraud, President Donald Trump says his campaign will pursue all legal avenues to ensure full transparency in this election. To that end, Georgia's preparing for a recount. Here's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger.
Right now, Georgia remains too close to call. Out of the approximately 5 million votes cast, we'll have a margin of a few thousand.
So far, Biden leads Trump by more than 1,500 votes. Officials are waiting for military and overseas ballots. Provided they were postmarked by Election Day, they have until November 12th to arrive. With 20 electoral votes at stake, the race could come down to Pennsylvania. Biden slightly ahead there, too. State Republicans are asking the U.S. Supreme Court to ask for an order that mail ballots arriving after Election Day be segregated. The state's top elections official had already ordered the ballots be kept separate. NPR's Windsor Johnson says Trump's unsubstantiated claims of fraud are meeting with mixed reactions among Republicans.
The Trump campaign has accused several Democratic cities, including Philadelphia, of a lack of transparency at the polls. Speaking on CBS, Republican Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey defended the state's election process and called the president's allegations baseless and very disturbing.
The people counting ballots, they're working really hard. And, you know, I voted for President Trump. I endorse President Trump. I want the next president to be the person who legitimately wins the Electoral College, and I will accept whoever that is.
The Trump campaign has filed lawsuits here and in other states to temporarily stop the vote counting. The Biden campaign has called the legal challenges meritless. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Philadelphia.
Another holdout's Nevada. The majority of the remaining ballots won't be counted until Sunday. NPR's Layla Fadel reports more counts are expected later today in the state's most populous county, home to Las Vegas.
The counting process has been beset by legal challenges backed by the state GOP and the Trump re-election campaign. So far, the courts blocked previous suits for lack of evidence. A new lawsuit claims some 3,000 people who don't live in the state voted. With protesters massing outside, Clark County Registrar of Voters Joe Gloria says they're looking into the accusation, but it is legal for someone who is out of state for school or work to vote.
I have employees who are nervous leaving the building, and rightfully so. They worked late into the night, so we strongly encourage all of them not to leave by themselves. They can also request an escort from our security people or law enforcement.
The elections office is now flanked with law enforcement. Layla Fadel, NPR News, Las Vegas.
You're listening to NPR News. Two men face charges for illegally possessing firearms after they traveled to Philadelphia and were found near the convention center where mail-in votes are being counted. Philadelphia police say the men are from Chesapeake, Virginia. Their names have not been released. While reports indicate the men intended to stop the vote counting, investigators would not confirm that. Philadelphia officials have openly worried about the possibility armed people might show up in the city to disrupt the election after President Trump repeatedly questioned the integrity of the city's election system and vote counting. Actor Johnny Depp will no longer appear in the Fantastic Beasts film franchise. NPR's Anastasia Siulkas reports his departure comes days after the actor lost a libel suit in the UK. A tabloid newspaper had described Depp as a, quote, wife beater.
On Friday, Johnny Depp wrote on Instagram that Warner Brothers, the studio behind Fantastic Beasts, asked him to resign. On Monday, Depp lost a libel case against the British tabloid The Sun. A judge found that 12 of his ex-wife Amber Heard's 14 accusations of physical assault were supportable. Depp played the dark wizard Gellert Grindelwald in the first two film adaptations of J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter prequel series. In a statement, Warner Brothers confirmed to NPR that Depp has left the franchise and that the studio has pushed back the release of the third Fantastic Beasts to summer 2022.
This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Uma, a cloud-based phone service for small businesses with an automated virtual receptionist and mobility features to run their businesses from anywhere. More at OOMA.com.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
One new case of COVID-19 was reported today by the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization. The case is a Kodiak resident who recently traveled. Contact tracing is underway. The total case count since the start of the pandemic on Kodiak is now at 141, with 34 cases being classified as active. Three cases recently completed their isolation period and are no longer included in the count of active cases. This has lowered the active count since yesterday, which was 36. Usually the news we report is about our community and not about KMXT, but today we have some news of our own to tell you about. It involves KMXT's news director, Maggie Wall, and her Alaska Fisheries Report.
From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall.
This week's Alaska Fisheries Report is Maggie's last show.
So now we come to the end of the program, where I have to say goodbye. Not just goodbye for this week, but goodbye to the Alaska Fisheries Report and to all you wonderful listeners and to the great reporters around the state that have contributed to the show this past several years that I've been working on it.
And Maggie is passing the torch on to me to host and produce the show, which is carried on public radio stations across the state.
Hi, this is Jay Barrett in Homer. I wanted to thank Maggie Wall and express my appreciation for the great work she's done over the last 3 years on the Alaska Fisheries Report. It has sounded way better since I got rid of that last guy. So Maggie, good luck with whatever you're doing next. Mr. Haynes has got some big shoes to fill.
Maggie, it's Angela Denning from Petersburg. I've listened to your voice for so many years, it's hard to imagine not hearing "I'm Maggie Wall" over the upbeat music at the end of the Fisheries Report. Besides your news of the week, I've appreciated all of your "be safe out there" personal reminders to fishermen out on the water.
I'm Lainey Welch. I've known Maggie Wall for 30 years, and she's such a talented news writer and editor. She's of the old school, where she can pull together a good story and be on the air in no time without missing a beat. And she's got the kind of historical memory that's hard to find nowadays, not just for Alaska's fisheries, but for people and events that helped shape our state. I'd encourage people to check out a radio series Maggie did a few years ago called When Crab Was King. It's such a beautiful mix of music and old Kodiak voices and stories. Maggie Wall is an Alaska broadcast treasure, and we haven't heard the last of her.
Maggie Wall has been involved with the Alaska Fisheries Report for the past 20 years. She will remain at KMXT in an advisory capacity to help mentor our reporters and staff, and we thank her for that. Alaska's legislative leaders are calling on Governor Mike Dunleavy to call a special session to extend the state's public health emergency disaster declaration that will expire on November 15th. Dunleavy's office says the governor is considering all options. In a letter, Anchorage Republican Senate President Kathy Geisel and Dillingham Independent House Speaker Bryce Edgman asked Dunleavy to either call the session or to appeal to legislators to hold one. Geisel says having the legislator extend the declaration would ensure that it will hold up legally. State law says the legislature must approve any extension of any disaster that lasts more than 30 days.
Our driving focus is maintaining safety here in the state of Alaska for municipalities, for businesses, for families, and empowering the governor to continue to put in place solid policies to reduce the spread of this virus.
Dunleavy declared a disaster on March 11th and submitted a bill seeking to extend it for a year. The legislature amended the bill so it would end on November 15th. Healthcare providers, hospital leaders, and municipal officers have called for the declaration to be extended, saying they need it to respond to COVID-19. Edgman says a special session would be narrowly focused.
We need to make the call very limited, keep it to one item, and create an environment such as we had in May where the legislature went down and very quickly got its business done with.
Dunleavy Chief of Staff Ben Stevens has said that if the legislature didn't immediately call itself into session, the governor could issue a new disaster declaration. He says state law would allow that. While members of both majorities in the legislature support a special session, others oppose extending the declaration. Soldotna Republican Senator Pete Michicki says Geisel hadn't polled him on whether to hold a special session. He says he's skeptical of extending all the powers laid out in the original declaration. He added that he's open to Dunleavy taking limited action, which he says the legislature could review once it gathers for its regular session in January. The Coast Guard will deploy its only heavy icebreaker to the Arctic this winter to, quote, protect the nation's maritime sovereignty and security in the region, unquote, according to a Coast Guard press release. The Coast Guard says it normally sends the Polar Star to Antarctica for Operation Deep Freeze, an annual mission to resupply the nation's Antarctic stations. However, this year's resupply at McMurdo Station in Antarctica was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Aircraft will be used for a limited resupply at the McMurdo Station. A full resupply would still require a heavy icebreaker, and the Coast Guard aims to send the Polar Star towards the South Pole next year.
That's the sound of two Unalaska high schoolers wading upstream in the Iluluk River, rhythmically slapping large dip nets on the surface of the water and following another group of students as they deployed a seine net.
So the eggs can be exposed to the air for a short period of time. You don't want them to be exposed to the air for too long because the molt spores will land on them and the fungus can start to grow on the eggs. The dead eggs will appear white. So any egg that is white was not fertilized yesterday. They will continue.
That's high school science teacher Stephen Gregory, and the students are part of his fisheries class. They were collecting spawning silver salmon for a salmon fertilization project. It's part of a salmon hatchery unit in the class, which Gregory has been teaching in Unalaska for the past 19 years. Gregory says the class covers a number of topics, ranging from basic biology to commercial fishing and salmon hatchery operation. In this unit, the students performed a salmon census and are now collecting 3 male and 3 female silvers to fertilize eggs, which will ultimately develop into young salmon, which will be released into the Iluluk River. Last week, the students waded out into the river, stretched the seine from bank to bank, collected 2 spawning pairs, and began the fertilization process.
So, like, 2 people go down and they scare the fish into the net, and then a bunch of people stand on the net so the fish can't escape. And then as the people come down spearing it, the net comes all the way around and catches the fish, hopefully males and females.
That's Natalie Butner, a junior at Unalaska High School. She says she's excited to be in the course and that it's something that seems unique to the region. As the course has progressed, Butner says she's gained more interest in the subject, as she's been able to observe the salmon daily, from counting silvers from the banks of the river to assisting with the fertilization process. Gregory encourages the students to actively participate, but, especially in the beginning, he says the fertilization process is very delicate and requires an experienced approach. And
what I do is I express the eggs from the female. I usually do that because, again, it takes a certain amount of experience to be able to squeeze the eggs out. You don't want to break the eggs. It's very bad if you break the eggs because the contents of a broken egg will interfere with the fertilization of the healthy eggs. And so it's very important.
From that point, Gregory says they get the male and fertilize the eggs. They then add salt to water from the Ululuk River, which is then added to the eggs. They started adding the extra salt about 4 years ago, and it has increased their fertilization success rate to about 90%, a percentage that Gregory says is comparable to professional hatcheries. Next, they put the eggs into incubation trays with running water to simulate the undergravel nest in the river, also known as a red. Gregory and his students monitor the eggs until they become fry, which are small salmon that no longer have a yolk sac attached to them. Most of the fry are released into the river, but some, Gregory says, are kept longer in the hatchery.
And then once the alevins have turned into fry, then we put them in the other part of the hatchery. It's called the raceway, and the raceway simulates the flowing water part of the river. And so that's where the salmon go when they're fry, and then they turn into what are called smolt.
And with those 50 fry that they keep, Gregory says they will feed them and do experiments on them and chart their growth.
And watch them turn into smolt. And so in this spring, May of 2021, they'll be about as long as your hand, and we will let them go along with the fry from the eggs that we captured last week.
Along with some of the elementary students, Gregory's class will release last year's fry into the river in the spring and will nurture another school of salmon for next year's class to observe and then release. In the meantime, Gregory uses the fry to teach students about a number of subjects, from the salmon life cycle to watershed quality.
So this right here is sodium thiosulfate. This is what we use to determine how much dissolved oxygen there is in the water. So right now the water is just super mucky, right? After we add this chemical in, this chemical pack, we have to mix it up. And then after that, we transfer it into this little tube.
That's Rodri Sebastian, another student in the class. And as other students feed the fry or clean the raceway and gather around a microscope to look at a fertilized egg while Sebastian excitedly explains this process, it's clear that Gregory's class means a lot to them. And as Gregory discusses aspects of the course and details the life cycle of a salmon, it's easy to see where that enthusiasm originates.
Do not take the salmon that run in our river for granted. The amount of urbanization that has taken place in this town it's obvious that they've negatively impacted our watershed, and I'm very passionate about that.
While Gregory remains frustrated with some of the ways local streams and water quality are neglected, he says he's noticed a significant increase in the silver salmon population in the river since they began regularly offering the course and releasing salmon into the stream.
Our operations here at the hatchery have done nothing but enhance, make more silver salmon for sure. It's been amazing to see the comeback. When I was a kid here, there were hardly any of them spawning out there. I never saw them spawning out there, and today you can go out there for two or three straight weeks now and see, you know, 100 at least actively spawning at any one time. So it's been a success. So
Gregory says the class will try again this week, weather permitting, to catch another spawning pair of silvers. In Unalaska, I'm Maggie Nelson.
We are the stream keepers of this river. We are the stewards of this river, and I teach my students that.
Are there any fish left in here? I think we might have struck out today.
The Midday Report on KMXT is brought to you in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, where you'll find the Simmons Dual Comfort Mattress, allowing you to customize your sleep experience. Also featuring massage and zero-gravity chairs from the Human Touch Company and sofas and love seats by Stanton. 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The number of boots on deck has declined across Alaska. More after this.
An AMC-trained fisherman is more likely to survive an emergency at sea. Learn more at AMC.org.
A five-year snapshot of trends in the numbers of boots on deck across Alaska shows that most fisheries have lost jobs since hitting a peak of 8,501 harvesters in 2015. Fishing jobs then fell to around 8,000 for the next 2 years before dropping again in 2018 to about 7,600. In 2019, average monthly fishing employment was 7,653. Overall, the fishing sector is down 848 jobs over 5 years. Those are just a few findings on harvesting jobs featured in the November edition of Alaska Economic Trends by the State Department of Labor. For some species, employment bucked the downward trend. Shellfish employment had grown by 42 jobs since 2015, representing 23.4% growth in that small sector. Sablefish was the only other category to add jobs over 5 years by 22, settling in at a yearly average of 646 jobs. Halibut harvesting gained just 3 jobs last year for a total of 1,071. For Alaska's salmon fisheries, which represent the most workers on deck, despite small gains last year, they remain below the 5-year average of 4,472 jobs. 4 regions, Southeast, South Central, Kodiak, and the Aleutians, added jobs last year. Harvester jobs are tricky to calculate because fishermen are considered self-employed. Economists infer jobs in a given month from fish landings. And because fishing permits are tied to specific gears and boat sizes, they can roughly estimate how many people are on the job averaged across a year. The November trends also features processing seafood in Alaska during a pandemic. Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMSI instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 6th day of November, the year 2020. The sun rose today at 8:34. It will set again at 5:12 this evening, giving us 8 hours and 33 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 29 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 4:40 p.m. That will be an 8.3-foot tide, followed by a low tide at nearly midnight, 11:45 p.m., of 0.8 feet. Next high tide will be at 6:36 a.m. tomorrow, 6.1-foot tide. And then our low tide on the east side at nearly noon will be at 11:33 a.m., a 4.2-foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you will have a high tide coming up at 5:06 p.m. That will be a 13-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 12:07 a.m., just after midnight, of 2 feet. Your next high tide will be at 6:52 in the morning tomorrow, an 11.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 12:29 p.m., about 12:30 in the afternoon, of 6.5 feet on the west side. 41 degrees currently here in Kodiak. It says 44 degrees according to the thermometer right outside the window here on Signal Hill. So considerably warmer than it has been. And we're looking for a 30% chance of rain, mainly between 1 and 4 p.m. this afternoon. Mostly cloudy skies, which will continue overnight. Slight chance of rain before 7 p.m. Then just a chance of rain after 1 a.m. But increasing clouds, a low of about 38 tonight. For tomorrow, look for rain mainly after 7 a.m., a high near 48 tomorrow, light and variable winds. And for Sunday, a 30% chance of rain, mostly cloudy skies, and a high again near 48. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 1,019 millibar low, 35 nautical miles southwest of Middleton Island, will move inland Saturday morning. A 989 millibar low in the North Pacific will move to 30 nautical miles northwest of Kodiak City on Sunday morning. Your resulting weather, Marin Island to Sitkanak on Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through Saturday. Southwest wind to 25 knots right now and seas to 12 feet. For tomorrow, look for south winds to 20 knots, becoming southeast 30 tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 10 feet. And for Sunday, look for west wind to 45 knots and seas building to 18 feet on Sunday on the east side offshore. Over on the west side in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tomorrow. Southwest wind to 20 knots right now, becoming variable 10. For tonight, variable 10 will turn to east 15 after midnight. And for tomorrow, southeast 15 will become east 30 tomorrow afternoon. Seas building to 7 feet tomorrow afternoon in the Shelikof. And for Sunday, look for west wind to 40 knots, 40 knots, seas to 10 feet in the Shelikof on Sunday. So not so good. Well, time has just about run out. The Crab Fest Committee needs to have your retro revival-themed Kodiak Crab Festival logo in by Monday. Monday at 5 p.m. It needs to be at the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce office. For details and rules, go to kodiakcrabfest.com. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session on Tuesday, November 10th. That meeting will happen at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multi-purpose room. It's open to the public, but you will be asked to wear a mask and socially distance. For additional information, call the city clerk at 486-8636. And also, the city council will be holding a regular council meeting in the borough assembly chambers on Thursday. That meeting will happen at 7 p.m. The meeting is open to the public, who are asked to wear a mask and socially distance. Again, call the clerk at 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.